Greetings from Podcastville. It's Thursday, the 11th of motherfucking April. The Church of What's Happening Now is brought to you by one of my favorite companies of all time, Onnit. Supplements that work from Shroom Tech to Alpha Brain to Shroom Tech Immune and Sport to the protein powders. You know me, I've been with Onnit for 6, 7, 8 years, even before the podcast started. And the Alpha Brain will make you tip-top magoo with 100% money-back guarantee. So go to Onnit.com right now. Look at this list of supplements. If there's something you like on the way out, press in.
Church.
And get 10% off delivered to your house. You don't got to leave the store. You don't got to go to Novate. Nothing. That's how Onnit works. The Church is also brought to you by, and I love to welcome. Let me explain something to you. I love the city of Pittsburgh. I love the city of Buffalo. I love Lexington, Kentucky. There's a lot of places I love. I love Paducah, Kentucky. But there's only one problem. There's no direct flights. There's connecting flights. You know what a connecting flight does to my back? It kills me, especially when I got to get off the out of the plane and drive another 40 or 45 minutes. It just destroys my back. I got something sent to me, and it is tremendous. It's called a Teeter Inversion Table. Okay, like I said, this is going to sound a little strange, guys, but hanging upside down is great for your back. I got the thing sent to me last week. When I got off the plane in Pittsburgh, my wife said, we got it sent. Let's hook it up. Let me tell you something. I hung yesterday and the day before, and today my back feels tremendous. You know why? Because Teeta helps decompress your spine, and like magic, boom, the pain goes away. It's simple. Just hang upside down and let gravity do the work. What I'm going to do is this, okay? Teeta inversion tables have thousands of reviews on Amazon with an average 4.9-star rating, and they have a special offer just for the Church Savages. For limited time, we're going to give you $70 off a Teeta inversion table, plus $100 worth of bonus accessories. Go to Teeta.com/church. You also get free shipping, free returns, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. No risk to try it out. Remember, you can only get $70 off a Teeta inversion table, plus free bonus accessories by going to Teeta.com/church. That's Teeta.com/church. Again, that's Teeta.com/church. And get upside down, you bad motherfuckers. Take this mule, Lee. Oh, shit. It's the motherfucking Church of What's Happening Now. Coming to your living room. Beautiful day to be alive.
No big up on the con, man. Say
big up, big up.
Tony Hinchcliffe.
To kill people and
the Christ Killer. And your Uncle Joey, motherfuckers. Here we go.
Gunman alone keep gunman friend. Firebun, fire all the informer them. Informer alone keep informer
friend. 1970-something, nigga, I don't sweat the day. My mom is late, so I had to plan my escape.
Are you fucking kidding me or what? Tony Hinchcliffe in the fucking house.
What's up, my man?
I can't call it. Great to have you back.
Yeah,
it's been a while and shit. I did not know you were a heavy Pink Floyd fan.
Huge Pink Floyd fan, man.
Now, between you and I, yeah. Do you like the Sid Barrett shit?
Really? Honestly, not that much.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's fucking horrible. Yeah. I'd rather hear Yoko Ono jump up and down with a ukulele.
Yeah.
It was like, when people came up to me, there were certain types of music when I was growing up that when people came up to me and said they really liked this, I would look at them and say, really? Or is it that you're trying to fucking be cool?
Right.
Because this is garbage.
Yeah. He was
trying to be cool. Let me know. But the early Pink Floyd is like Yoko Ono. It's like nails on a fucking board.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't start coming around till I wasn't hip to Pink Floyd as much as Led Zeppelin, Sabbath. And then one night I took a hit of acid and I went to see a midnight movie. When I was growing up, midnight movies were huge, Tony Hinchcliffe. Every movie theater had two movies. What's the movie where people yell and scream?
Oh, Rocky Horror.
Rocky Horror. He had Rocky Horror. And then the other one would have a classic or a rock concert. The song remains the same. And one of the ones I went to see was Pink Floyd Live at Pompeii.
Oh, yeah, I know that. Yep, I have that DVD.
Yeah, we went to see that in the movies, you know, on a hit of fucking acid or methadone juice or whatever the fuck we did. We went in there, and I remember leaving there going, there's something to that Pink Floyd. But I had Dark Side of the Moon. I had Dark Side of the Moon in the eighth grade because I liked the song Money. And I told Lee, I used to have the McDonald's All-American Basketball poster on my wall. I had a picture of Dr. J about the slam. I had another picture of Led Zeppelin that was a backwards picture. It was taken so everybody was opposite. So if Jimmy Page was really a righty in the picture, he was a lefty. It was the weirdest picture. It was very rare. I had that on my wall. And this kid, Vinnie Lynch, God rest his soul, took me and I took a hit of fucking blot of acid. I was maybe freshman year.
Jesus.
I took a hit of blot of acid with like 5 or 6 beers and I got fucked up. And I went home and I laid down and I had the 8-track to Dark Side of the Moon. I had one of those portable 8-track players and I put Dark, so the thing was in my ear.
Yeah.
And that On the Run, the pianos and shit. And that's the first time I really started tripping. Yep. The posters were going.
I mean, that thing, you could play that for somebody who's stone sober. You got good speakers.
Lee don't like it.
When he would get me really high on edibles and then bong hits, he'd put that stuff on and it's like, I understand that you say it's like made to trip. It's terrifying. It gets your heart rate going. Like, it doesn't even really sound like music to me.
Side of the Moon will fuck you up.
Is that the one with planes? Like,
no, that's what the wall.
Yeah. Okay, that's my God. Wall. That one's even worse.
That's the wall. The wall is a psychological fucking mess.
Have you listened to those things sober, though?
Yeah, I've listened to it sober. I mean, it's interesting, but I start thinking about when I'm high and it gets me all riled up.
Yeah, that's too many edibles. That's just the edibles. You're having flashbacks.
Yeah.
I loved, as a young kid, getting that fucking high.
Yeah.
And putting that on to test my wits.
Well, that's how it started.
That was my world.
That's how it started with me in high school when I started getting stoned with me and my buddies. I mean, that was it. It was on like Donkey Kong. And then, you know, Pink Floyd was really the first art I ever appreciated. Pink Floyd sort of got me into Tarantino, which got me into, you know, respecting art. You know, it was Floyd and Tarantino. That was it when I was in high school. I remember our senior year, we had like our rivalry week or whatever, where, you know, you hang out with the buddies and all this. And each night, everybody crashes at everybody else's house. Like, so Wednesday's Tony's night. And I put together this whole thing where me and the buddies watched, it was Super Troopers. And then I showed them Pink Floyd matched up with Wizard of Oz. Now, back then, you know, you had to literally have the frickin' VHS or whatever of Wizard of Oz, and you had to have a separate CD player to play the two things, and you had to match them up yourself. It's not like you can go on YouTube. You just type in WIZ and the rest pops up now, and you could watch it matched up. But that stuff matches up, and it's one of the great anomalies, one of the great mysteries to me up there with DB Cooper and everything, is how the hell does that stuff match up? It matches up lyrically. It matches up video wise. You've done that, right?
I saw it when that shit first came out, and I was blown away.
It's ridiculous.
And so, it's not something that... It's fucking crazy.
Yeah. Because, like, either they made that album knowing what they were doing and sort of like, oh, we need this to match up with Wizard of Oz. Like, why would they do that? But lyrically, time-wise, all these things for 52 minutes. You know, it ends with her putting her head to the Tin Man's heart, and it ends with that heartbeat. You know, all this stuff. And it's what the best-selling album of all time next to the Eagles' Greatest Hits or whatever. Yes. And then it's Dark Side of the Moon, which says a lot because, you know, they've always painted Pink Floyd, they being like, you know, whatever, media and people, as this just psychedelic band. But you ask any musician who their favorite bass player, you know, whatever is, they tell you. Roger Waters, Pink Floyd. You know, and that's the thing I think with Sid. Sid got a bad reputation, I think, because he didn't want to play anything mainstream. And those guys are like, wanted to make money and have hits. They're like, we could have hits.
Yeah, this guy's throwing forks against the wall, hitting his hand with a hammer and yelling. It was tough to listen to. When it's really weird when I speak to people who are high up in music, which is not a lot, and they say to me, well, who's your favorite guitarist? Like, I love Jimmy Page. Okay, I think Jimmy Page is brilliant. The Song Remains the Same proves it. I love Pat Benatar's guitar player. I love Randy Rhoads. But the guy that splits my heart in half with his guitar, there's been two guys, and that's David Gilmour and Eric Clapton.
Yep, I'm with you on that.
Both from that same fucking school of guitar playing.
Yep.
I could lie to you and tell you all this shit. My first experience with Pink Floyd was Dark Side of the Moon. And then I was lost in this Sabbath, Stones, Who world and whatever. And I started hanging out with this dude, and he had a shed. And he put it on fucking Animals. Okay, now, if you're high and you're not ready for animals, it will take you fucking down.
Yeah.
And I was groomed on animals to the point that if my daughter's around, I put dogs on her.
Yeah.
If she's playing, like she plays Jenga in my office on the floor, we play Jenga together, I'll fucking put dogs on.
Yeah.
And when she hears the dogs barking, she reacts to me and she asks me what that is. And I tell her that there's three types of people in the world, dogs, pigs, and fucking sheep. Mm-hmm. You got to pick one. You could be a pig and end up like Harvey Weinstein. He could be a fucking dog. And he just breaks it down to you. Lyrically, in the beginning, you got to be crazy. Yep. You got to have a real need. You got to sleep on your toes. When you're off the street, you got to be able to pick out the easy meat with your eyes closed. Yep. That tells you the story of life right there. If you're going to go out into the jungle, that better be your fucking moniker. Before you leave the house, that's it. It's not a fucking day. He painted it out for you, you know. Yeah. I don't even know what the second verse is, but I know it's like fucking, oh, you end up with cancer, and you're fucking listening to, you're on a hit of acid. Mm-hmm. Your mind is fucking somewhere else, and this guy's telling you that if you don't attack, you know, you're going to end up with fucking dying, an old man of cancer in Florida and shit, and you're listening to this, and all of a sudden it takes this fucking guitar. This Gilmore comes in. You hear these dogs barking. And in those days, you got monotone speakers. So the speakers, the barking would come out of two speakers at two different times. It would blow your fucking brains off.
So you got the lyrics, right?
You got
the guitar.
The guitar would break your heart.
The guy who's writing it is the bass player, who, and basically their rivalry, Roger Waters and David Gilmour never got along. They couldn't stand each other, but that's what fed the band. They were competing with each other. Oh, you think the bass line to Money is going to be what steals the show? Wait till you see what I go cook up in the room. I'm going to go write the guitar solo, you son of a bitch, right? So this competition, this healthy competition, made it so that they're literally trying to steal the show. He writes Comfortably Numb. Gilmour is like, well, I'll go write the guitar solo then. They did those things separately, like sort of together, but really separately. Gilmour would go off and do whatever and figure that out. So you got the lyrics, you got the guitar, you got the bass, drums, whatever. Sure, they got a drummer, they're written by the bass player. But another crazy fun fact is they were the first band to ever apply colors or decorate a stage. It used to just be a black curtain. That was
it.
There wasn't inflatables, lasers, colors. There was no screens. No band was showing anything behind them. That wasn't a thing. It was listen to the music, watch us play. So you when you factor in everything, and to this day, and not only back in the late 70s and 80s were they spending more money than everybody else to put on a big production, but to this day, I got to go see Roger Waters at the Staples Center this most recent time with my friend Tal Wilkenfeld. Amazing bass player, one of the best in the world, and she loves comedy. Her and I made friends, and she's in deep with everyone in music. Everyone looks up to her. It turns out at the end of the show, Roger Waters, we were in the green room with everybody that's in the band and everything, but Roger's not there. He has his own separate green room with like chocolate fountains and everything, like stuff you just dream of, like stuff you hear in imagined made up stories. And but the point is we were so in that she ended up running into the guy, you know, in the middle of the big Staples Center that like runs everything. Because like he's like, hey, Tal. And she's like, hey, blah, 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 blah. And I listened to them and he was telling her, like, you see that up there? That's an extra whatever it was, 15 million in speakers that they brought in that they just have hanging from the top of the Staples Center, like extra, extra, super crazy sound that even, you know, she didn't know about it. It was like inside information, basically. Like, they still, to this day, are pushing it to blow people's minds away, to shreds.
Well, that was the problem why they didn't tour the wall. They did the 6 dates in Philly or in New York, and they did the other 6 dates in fucking, because the production was too expensive. I paid $15 for those tickets.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know, I think the top ticket was $28, maybe $25. So they broke even on those shows. You know, I read somewhere where they basically broke even. They couldn't tour that. It was, first off, if you watch everything made, there was a couple bands between, I say, 69 to 80 before cocaine took over this great country of ours. Everything was pretty much every band. If you watch the videos and all that shit, even Woodstock, it's made because they assume that you're tripping. Mm-hmm. If you watch The Song Remains the Same, there's colors in there. There's sketches of him climbing up the wall and touching Aleister Crowley, and then the guitars and the fucking lights. They made shit to fuck with you. When you listen to Pink Floyd and you're on acid, is where you see the brilliance. You hear that heartbeat throughout their songs. It matches up with your heartbeat. Yeah. All their music has a heartbeat to it, a rhythm, and it matches up with your rhythm. And deep into the trip, you'll realize you're breathing. It's fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. It's and I see what you're talking about even with The Wizard of Oz, because way before The Wizard of Oz, like when my mom died, they came. My mom died November 8th. The Wall came out a couple of weeks after that. And one of the best songs in The Wall is Mother. Mm-hmm. It's a great fucking song.
Unbelievable.
And here I am at parties, and the album would play, and I'd have to listen to this fucking song. And it was like, Jesus Christ, it was a beautiful jam.
I mean, I think it hits everybody at 1,000 miles.
Oh, my God, it just throws your fucking feet off, you know. Yeah. But by the time I went to see The Wall, I was already convinced that David Gilmour was up there. But what I'm fucking 56 years old. I went to see this concert when I was 17, okay? What do I remember from this night? I remember the lead up. Tony Hinchcliffe, the lead up was one of the best things ever. Because The Wall came out, tickets went on sale, and the countdown began. And in those days, it was like, Lee, I know what we've been doing lately, but we're going to kick it up for this concert. Somebody's going to die. Like, we were 17 and we had already decided.
Jesus.
Somebody's going to die. The Wall was an event in my hometown. Like, 80 people from that, and the group that we hung out with all went, made the trek to fucking the Nassau Coliseum. It was 5 fucking nights. So all of us went, you know, to one of the particular nights. But that album came out maybe November 20th or something like that. That's all you heard. There was no Springsteen. There was no Led Zeppelin. There was no Michael Jackson. The city was infested with The Wall. Everybody's house you walked into was blown away. People were blown the fuck away, as big as they were with Thriller. I'm telling you, Christmas, you were going to people's house. Nobody even had Christmas music on. Everybody was blown away by the fucking Wall. And once New Year's hit, it was just 40 days. I'll never forget, like, we were like, now we're going into deep, deep territory. Acid every night, fucking formaldehyde, fucking crystal THC. It was 4 or 5 nights a week getting ready for this fucking show.
How long did it take for the album to hit? If it came out the 11th, was it like a week, 2 weeks? Like, how long?
That day! Really? Everybody was anticipating it. See, he fucking did an interview where he said something about, you know, I like playing, but I hate the fucking people. Mm-hmm. That's how arrogant Waters is. He goes, I wish we could play with a wall in between us. He made that statement like in 1975. And the name of the album is The Wall. It's about him growing up in Eastern Germany during fucking Hitler or something like that. Jesus. And yeah, it's a fucking, how do you classify Joey? Is it an opera? Is it an album? It's a fucking work of art.
Yeah, it's in everything.
And you have to see the lead up to it. Like, they just didn't fucking take 4 years off and get a house in Jamaica and buy a pound of coke. They, if you look at their hits, it was 75, 76, yeah, 78, 79, and it was 4 fucking albums that will remain the greatest albums of all time. Yeah. I mean, Stevie Wonder put out 3 albums and he released Songs to the Key of Life, which is fucking brilliant. I can name a couple artists, but it'll never happen again. You know, I don't want to sound like that old guy that's putting shit down, but it'll never happen again. Look at the release dates for their
crazy thing. Wish You Were Here came out, right? That might be the most recognizable song, but it's the worst song on the album. You kicks it off with Shine On You Crazy Diamonds. Tremendous. There's only 5 songs on the album. Shine On You Crazy Diamonds, which is ridiculous for 14 minutes, right? And then what? And then Wish You Were Here. And then Have a Cigar, which is the jam, right? And then Welcome to the Machine. And then they close it out with an even jazzed up steroid version of Shine On You Crazy Diamonds. 2 of the songs are the same song, but one's different, you know, just pumped up and different. And again, the lyrics and all these things are ridiculous. I mean, just unbelievable.
What's the release date?
So The Dark Side of the Moon came out in 73. Then Wish You Were Here was 75. Animals was 77. The Wall was 79.
Hmm.
And what was the album before Dark Side? Metal.
Dark Side of the Moon?
Yeah. Before Dark Side of the Moon, what was the album?
Obscured by Clouds? Metal?
Metal.
And then Atom of a Mother?
Atom Heart Mother.
Yeah.
When did Uruguma come out?
69.
That's not a bad one. Mm-hmm. I don't mind that one. I like Metal. Metal has what on it?
Let's see.
Metal has that one fucking jam, the one that they did live in Pompeii.
Be careful with that axe, Eugene. Might be. I think it's around there. You got to check out David Gilmour live in Gdansk.
Tremendous.
He does a version of that Shine On You Crazy Diamonds. Where it's just almost all just him singing. Oh, my God. That guy's voice. These guys took care of themselves.
Side one is One of These Days, A Pillow of Winds, Fearless, Saint-Tropez, Seamus, and then the side two only has Echoes.
Echoes. Yeah. The whole album is Echoes. Yeah. When they do Echoes in that Pompeii stadium, mm-hmm. and he starts going crazy on that fucking guitar, mm-hmm. if you don't feel that, for people who, you know, just buy Animals. Buy Animals, listen to the words, listen to the lyrics. I don't even know his guitar. Like, I can't even, to me, my favorite album musically of his, Gilmour, is Animals.
Yeah,
I think his guitar solo in the beginning of Dogs, at the end of Dogs, I think Sheep, the work on Sheep, Pigs, the guitar is fucking brilliant.
There's only five songs on that album.
Yeah, yep. That's what they did. They just did their own fucking thing.
There was five on Animals, five on Wish You Were Here.
But the songs were 9 minutes. You know, at that time, they knew.
Yeah. They had a 17-minute song. The first side is Pigs, and then it's a minute and a half, and then they have a 17-minute song. Dogs. Then Pigs, the first part on side two is 11 and a half. Sheep is 10 and a half. And that's it. And there's another minute and a half to close.
It really, and you know, so they come out for the wall, and you know, they got the midgets and the whole thing building the fucking wall. There you are tripping on acid.
Yep.
And there's midgets and there's a plane and there's all this shit. But if I had to define the moment that blew me away, like that moment that you're like, I'll never forget this, was when he came up on the top of the wall and did the guitar solo to Comfortably Numb. Mm. That was it. And you know what? It's live on YouTube. The night I went, the first night, opening night, is on YouTube.
Wow.
Somebody taped those shows and put them on YouTube.
Wow.
So you can watch all of them. It's fuzzy. It's shitty quality. But I didn't know you were a Pink Floyd guy, brother.
Huge, man. I mean, they you know, I was so depressed after high school. I had had a little case of the broken heart, you know, all that. Missed my high school sweetheart. We had broken up, and I was just sad and out of it. Pink Floyd kept me going. It was the only thing at one point that I really had that I loved. It was just this love for their music. I annoyed all of my friends, all of my family. Annoyed the hell out of them for years through high school and after that. When I moved out here to California for the first time, living with my brother, and he had a couple roommates, and they had this speaker system in the living room area. It's like this four-bedroom house or whatever, and man, I would blast that shit. I was the first one up. I didn't care that I was waking them up. It was a beautiful California day, and Floyd's jamming, and it set the tone for every day when I got out here. And It's just perfect music to me. There's Pink Floyd, and then there's everybody else. Between us, I've gotten into some arguments with people because I'll get into an argument with somebody if they want to get crazy with the Beatles and all that. I'll argue it, man. I will go nuts.
I've said it 1,000 times. My neighborhood, there was a lot of motherfuckers said and spick and all this shit, and there was never an argument. If you wanted to get into an argument in my hometown, start talking shit about music.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fucking argument to have. And in fact, yesterday on Twitter, one of the Tabascos, their last name was Tabasco, there was five of them.
Mm-hmm.
One of the Tabascos said, hey, I'm friends with Tabascos, they send their love. And I go, I just talked to a guy the other day. They were where I lived when I was 16, 17, 18. They were the neighbors to the Runnies. And the one brother thought he was Eddie Van Halen. you know, but he didn't play the guitar. He just had the long hair. Father, cut that fucking hair. You know, it was one of those Italian families and they had five boys. But we would sit there and argue for hours. Like, he would go in his house irritated. Because he'd start with, you know, fuck Ozzy Osbourne, and we're like, fuck David Lee Roth. Ozzy could eat him alive. Yeah, yeah. But Eddie Van Halen could eat up Tony Iommi. And then we'd start with, fuck Eddie Van Halen. How about David Gilmour? And then he'd start squawking in the water. He'd start pedaling back with, nah, 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 wait a second now. Yeah. You know, and I didn't say he was the best guitarist. I'm saying Eddie Van Halen revolutionized the guitar. Yeah, fuck that. And then fucking Randy Rhoads revolutionized it again. We just argue for hours. Yeah. Fuck you. You don't know what you're talking about. And then we throw Van Halen 2 with the poster of David Lee Roth handcuffed. And he'd go in the house pissed off because that always lost.
Yeah.
You lost me with that. You know, we've had discussions here when, you know, people don't know what America's like. Before John Lennon got shot, every white dude had an ace. White privileged people in those days all had an ace in the hole. Mm-hmm. You know, like it was like, you know, oh my God, I just listened to Led Zeppelin. The song remains the same. It's brilliant. Yeah, go ahead and have a good time with Led Zeppelin. Wait till the Beatles get back together. Mm-hmm. Like that was white. You know, instead of people, you know how today they send their stupid kids to school and that's white privilege?
Right.
That was white privilege back then. Everybody was shutting me and my friends down like, yeah, Bruce Springsteen.
And that would piss you guys off. You'd be like, fuck the Beatles.
Fuck the Beatles. And the first, when John Lennon got shot, that's it. Those motherfuckers went away because the Beatles weren't getting back together now. So now those motherfuckers stopped coming out because they were about to take a beating. How the Beatles doing now, bitch? How do you like the Beatles now, bitch? You bring them like a Pink Floyd album. It's not time for you to switch governments.
Yeah.
I'll never forget, there was a mural of the Beatles in the hallway. By the way, about a month ago, North Bergen High School put on a performance of Aliens.
Yeah.
Did you see how much fucking my high school got attracted for that? When I was growing up, with those people were disgusting. The stage hands, he used to sell weed to us. He would get weed sent to him from Hawaii. His name was Mr. Pullman. And he would get weed.
He might still be there.
Fuck him. No, he lives in Florida. He's like a fucking retired jerk off. He was another guy. I thought he was fucking badass. We used to torture him too. Then we stole his shipment one time. And that was the end of that. I robbed him for everything one time.
Wow.
I found out where he would put that weed. He was one of those guys that would do this shit. Like when we were in high school and he had this little pack of fucking... little fucking nerds that would do that Hawaii thing.
Yeah.
And then one day he started talking about he had the best weed in town. And it really was. It was a Hawaiian weed, and they'd put it on a stick with a string, and they'd mail it. And it was just a little stick like that. He wanted $35. That was a lot of money in 1980. But he'd hide it in a bag, in like a doctor's bag with all his paperwork and books.
How did he find that out?
Because I watched him from behind the curtain. You know me, Doug. I'm a voyeur. So it was me and another guy that were thinking about robbing him. But the other guy got close to the suitcase and he had those three-digit confirmations. You had to put your number in there. It was one of those old school ones, like a combination lock. And I'm like, dog, we're going back old school. We're taking the whole thing.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out later. We'll blow it up and throw the paperwork away. And that's exactly what we did.
Wow.
Sophomore year, the guy pissed me off. Like in those days when you did piss me off, I'd just give you some time. I'd sit in the bush and then rob you. When you least expect it, Tony Hinchcliffe goes out of town. I'm stealing those blah punk speakers he keeps talking about. You know those guys? I got new speakers. Wait till you come over. Okay, yeah. Wait till I come over. I'm taking them to go. You come up to me. I'm going down the shore for the weekend. There we go. We got blah punks. Call your cousin in Queens. We got some new speakers for him. Because what are your chances of ever meeting Lee's cousin in Queens? Lee's, we already got the speakers sold. I would wait till Tony left down the show. When he come back, my house got robbed. Where's Coco?
That guy probably still is mad about that briefcase. He know. Oh my God.
I don't give a fuck. I took the briefcase. I don't even know how we got it out of the building.
Do you remember how you opened it?
Oh, I slammed it against the wall and I stabbed it and opened it up. The fuck you think I opened it? I was stupid for a while. I thought, you know, like when I was a safe cracker. I wanted to actually, like, be one of those guys that would sit there and, like, figure out. You can't. You need 20 years of experience. An inside man has to teach you. So I met an Irish guy, and he's like, what, are you stupid? Just take the safe to go. So I had always had a dolly Oh, he always got a dolly in those days. You steal a dolly because you never know when you might get the call at 4 a.m. You got a dolly fucking ready to go. Hey, having that dolly is an extra fucking 200.
Yeah, but how do you hide the dolly? Like, how do you
just put it in your garage? Fuck it.
But when you're walking down the street with a dolly?
I just saw some guy delivering fucking boxes and then I stole his dolly. What the fuck? That's... Tony Inchcliffe, you know this type of people. You grew up with these fucking
Absolutely. Stuff. In Youngstown, nothing but you couldn't find a dolly. Everybody would just take them. You couldn't find a dolly.
I remember when I made Lee steal those milk crates.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I go, steal the milk crates.
The milk crates, the check from a restaurant. It'd be good to roll joints on.
In the 80s, we would steal those things. When people give you a check at a Chinese restaurant, those trays. The tray where everything's on, right there. You see behind. Oh. So when in the old days, the Chinese restaurant, when people would give you those, if you went to somebody's house and they had one of those and they had rolling papers and weed on it, you're like, oh my God, how cool are you? You robbed a Chinese restaurant.
That is cool. I've never even seen anybody do that
before.
Yeah,
you got to rob the tray.
He hasn't rolled one joint on it. He rolls it on the table still, but he got me high and he made me steal it. He's like, we just put this in your pocket.
Sure, just put it in your pocket. Take it to go. You don't know what life is till you rob something. You walk out and you're like, I robbed something. This is pretty easy. Why am I delivering newspapers?
Little Chinese takeout.
I can just robbed this.
Why am I delivering this?
Bob Pullman, Doug, he had like 20 of those. He had just gotten the delivery. You know, he was talking shit. He was in the hallway doing other shit. And I seen him shoot down to the principal's office, Doug. And he had a bunch of little faggy guardians around him. Like little fucking... and I went in there and I just took the briefcase. And I think I went out the back door. There was like a stairway down that you could put you out. And I walked out there with that little briefcase. Nobody fucking saw me. I think I put a winter jacket. I don't remember exactly what I did. But I opened it up on the side streets. And it was like an alleyway. I slammed it against the wall. It wouldn't open. Then I had a pocket knife. I stabbed it. I opened it up. I took the weed out. And there was a bunch of grades and shit papers. And I just threw it in the fucking garbage. And 2 days later, people were asking me, did you hear Mr. Pullman got robbed? Somebody stole his weed. He couldn't say nothing because he was a school teacher. So every time I'd see him, I'd give him one of these. How you doing? Everything all right, cocksucker? Hang low, whatever. High low, whatever the fuck those Hawaiians say.
Oh, God.
And he knew it was me. I tried to. There was a couple teachers, Tony Hinchcliffe. You know, I am very, like, I'll get you. Like, I'll get you. Don't worry about nothing. I'll get simple. You. Just give me time. I'll get you. There's a couple teachers from my high school that won't friend me on Facebook. But the most notable is Camel Breath McGrath. Mr. McGrath and me, bro, we used to go circles. We used to get coke. I used to get them booze and shit.
What grade was this?
Right when I grew up. I was friends with McGrath since freshman year. Mm-hmm. He used to smoke Camel with no filters, so we used to call him Camel Breath.
Wow.
His cigarette was orange. His fingers were fucking orange on the inside. Mm-hmm. He always smelled like heavy Camel cigarettes. And he was the running back coach. And we became friends, you know, over the years. And then he became the driver ed teacher. So what I would do is I would go, Tony Hinchcliffe, sign up for 1045 driver ed. Lee, sign up for 1045. As soon as you get there, sign all three of us up. So the first one at school signed us up, and we would all get in the car with McGrath. And little by little, we would just work him psychologically. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, for the first month, it was us three. And he'd go, oh, you guys are all right. And then what you do is the classes were 42 minutes. So you got behind the wheel for 12 minutes, three people. And then he had a steering wheel behind his thing. Cadillac made the car specifically for our high school, two cars. Not specifically for our high school.
For driver's ed.
For driver's ed.
Yeah.
So little by little. We used to make him go on Tunley Avenue, and we told him, McGrath, you know, he would pull into a driveway. But he would pull into Chan's Dragon Inn, the Chinese restaurant I always talk about. And it started, McGrath. You mind we go inside and get a little steak on a stick? You guys are going to get me in fucking trouble. I'm not supposed to stop. We just started with that. We got him to stop and get spare ribs. We got him. And then in time, we're like, Mr. McGrath, you mind if we stop and get a six-pack? And he would just look at us. It's 10 in the morning, guys. 2 beers apiece. Ain't nobody going to get hurt here. We'll give you one. That's a beer and a half each. You're in for a beer. Then we started buying six-packs, eight-packs. And then we just started. And then I started... Like, I started leaving blow for him in places. like that he would. In those days, I had an aunt, Zoraida. I'd tell my story about Comedy Central, and I would call her up and say, Zoraida, I'm having a hard time, but I could sell some coke. I'm going to come over, and she'd give me like 2 grams of coke, and I'd give him a gram. I'd leave it on the steering wheel or whatever, and he would like make believe he never got it. So we were friends like that, lightly, and then I robbed the high school. Me, Tommy Russo, and this dude, Dan Rego, robbed the high school. I quit high school.
Would you steal from it?
Jersey, but we went, really what we stole was the triple beam scales from the chemistry department. Oh. Because they're big, they're 40 apiece. It was $69 brand new at East West. What, are you kidding me? I'll bring them to the house, I'll deliver it for 30. 20, I'll take 25 if you got it. But they had 50 scales. Every desk had a scale where kids would measure fucking chemicals and shit. We would take them three. People would take them one at a time in a sports bag. One Sunday night, I go, listen, they got like 50 left. We better get them while the going is hot. Wow. We went in there. We took every fucking scale. We walked home with 3 scales. By the time we sold them, the balancing was off because we had to carry them.
Yeah.
Oh,
so people had to put the equilibrium back on them and shit like that. And 2 days later, McGrath came to my house. You got to give half the stuff back. So we gave back the football jerseys and the helmets and the pants and shit. I don't even know what we were going to do with
those. I was going to say, who's going to buy used jerseys?
I know. We were just retarded, dog.
Oh, my God.
And then me and him became tight. And then the day I was supposed to graduate, like a week later, we were in summer school. And one of our other teacher friends, one of my friends was in the jam. And we went to his house at 7 in the morning. We're like, listen, we were fucked up. We robbed a coke dealer. We were doing coke since Friday. My buddy couldn't go to summer school, so we got him to come out, and we gave him a rock of coke. So somebody had to be responsible for that money. So I called Camel Breath and said, hey, I gave your partner 2 grams or whatever. He never paid us. So McGrath paid me, and he goes, by the way, that shit you gave me, that wasn't cocaine. Let me show you what cocaine is. And he started taking out coke, and he goes, you know what I do besides teach? I deliver coke at night to people who don't want Spanish people at their house.
Wow.
Like, nobody wants a fucking Mexican coming into the house when you got, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, to make it look obvious. So he was the type of guy that put his suit on and came over to your house. They paid him a little extra. And I remember right up 2 weeks after high school ended, one night he took me to a party, and I told this story. He gave me a pill, and he goes, only eat half of it. It was a Paris Blue. At the time, a Paris Blue was Paris's answer to the Quaalude, the American Quaalude.
Oh, okay.
So it was like a little thinner tab. Fucking crazy shit. So I don't know. I think I said something about him on the Rogan podcast. Now he won't friend me and shit. Him and Palud, I owed money to. And then I owed his partner money. He had a great Cavalier, a Chevy Cavalier.
Yeah.
So one day I go, I want to put a bet in. I was putting bets in with him. The reason I robbed the jewelry store when I got out of high school was because I put a bet in with him, and I couldn't let him down. We lost like $8,000 on a Monday night with the fucking Steelers against the Cowboys in 80-fucking-1.
You put $8,000?
Well, between parlays and straight bets, I was retarded. What did you expect? Me and my buddies, I couldn't let Mr. McGrath down. He was it's like me putting a bet in with you.
Yeah.
So I had to rob the jewelry store. And I told him, I said, I'm going to rob the jewelry store. If I go to jail, you got to bail me out. But if I get out, I'll give you. And I gave him a nice gold chain. And oh, my God. This is some crazy shit we used to do.
Amazing. Statute of limitations.
We robbed a Hess gas station. And what they had were those books that you fucking go over the tunnel with, Lincoln Tunnel. That's when it was $4 for the toll. Now it's $16.
Jesus.
$4 for the toll. But if you bought a book, you got them for $3.75.
Right.
So bro, we went in that safe, and they had thousands of those books. I was just giving them away like calling cards, but I would sell them to him for coke. I'd give you 4 for a gram, and he would sell you coke in a bottle already.
Damn.
If the gram would come in a little bottle, all you had to do was open it and put it on your fucking finger. The good old days.
Wow.
High school's changed.
High school has changed a lot, my friends.
That's fucked up.
Tony Hinchcliffe. Glad to have you back on.
Yeah, of course.
When I had you on the first time, I didn't really know what was going on. I had just met you. I had just gone back to the store. But the other day, I was sitting there in my stoned self one night, and you came into my mind. I thought about the audience that I saw when you went to Manchester for killed Tony, and I was like, fucking Tony Hinchcliffe has come a long fucking way, you know. You've changed a lot. You've built this up. You've built this podcast up to, it's a fucking, it's a TV show in the making, really. I mean, sometimes you stream on Monday nights. We do the podcast early, and I'll watch a couple minutes of it, and it's like a fucking pan. Like, I don't think television can handle that anymore.
No, they can't, and that's why our, you know, so many people are falling in love, because they don't, you know, they don't have these commercial breaks that break up the energy of everything, and, you know, we read a couple ads at the beginning, and then we're in for an hour and a half plus. I mean, it's just, you know, it's the show that I always wanted to exist back when I was starting at the Comedy Store. I wanted to, you know, everybody wants a, not necessarily a shortcut, but just a way to get respect from your peers. You know what I mean? Get up there, and it's only a minute of stand-up, and then you just roll with the punches during the interview part, you know? And you find out about real people, and you get to meet the people and the difference between what they do as a stand-up comedian compared to who they really are. You know what I mean? Like, you're a veteran, so obviously you're the same during the interview part than you are with the stand-up, but sometimes you'll see the switch in these people, and you'll find out that the character that they thought was funny isn't as funny as their real selves and their real things. And I ask them questions, and they don't realize it sometimes, but they're kicking out better material during the interview part than they are during their stand-up part. And it's just, you know, it's a super comedy show, man. We're watching comedians do comedy with comedians, and I got the band being hilarious, Jeremiah Watkins.
Jeremiah Watkins is a one-man fucking machine.
Yep.
He really is. I got to take my hat off to him.
Yeah, he's that guy cracks me up.
All those young guys.
He cracks me up like how Jim Carrey used to crack me up when I was a kid, and how, you know, I mean, just something that you love. It's crazy. I always say it's one of my favorite things in all of comedy, and it just so happens to be on my show, is this band with Jeremiah and Joel Berg, you know, the drummer back there throwing out these one-liners just out of nowhere, getting the crowd going crazy, and it's just a perfect storm of stand-up and improv and fun.
Do you know what your show reminded me of? I hope you don't get offended. The Gong Show, yeah, when I was a kid.
No, yeah, I've gotten that comparison.
Gene, the Dancing Machine. Nothing made me happier as a kid than watching Gene, the Dancing Machine. I would cry right now. I would cry. Like, if Gene died from diabetes, the black dude, it broke my heart. Gene, the Dancing Machine was a fat black dude. All right? And Barris would be out there hosting. Also, I don't know where he'd go. You hear da 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 da, and he goes, "It's time for Gene, the Dancing Machine," and Gene, the Dancing Machine. He weighed like 300 pounds, black dude, right out of the ghetto, been cooking pork chops all his life, but he don't give a fuck. They're letting him loose. He's got a minute of fame, and him and Don Barris, he's da 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 da, and Gene would be fucking dancing, and then they'd have to cut like. They would tell whatever his name was, the host, Barrett, whatever. I don't know. I'm not saying it right. Like, listen, we're going to cut. He wouldn't give a fuck. He'd just keep playing the music. And you see NBC trying to hold on. Like, we can't. We got to throw a sponsor in. But this is so good. They would have the whole audience in a fucking. If you ever get a chance, look up Gene, the Dancing Machine on the Gong Show. You will fucking die. Just they would go off. TV would go off. So that's what. That's why I was thinking about it the other day. I'm like, it's time. After I saw that audience in Manchester,
yeah,
I go, it's time for this to go somewhere. This needs a fucking home.
Yeah, well, I mean.
But they can't touch it.
Right.
See, that's the problem. When you get some college kid to come in and go, well, right now it's 17%. There's 17 to 32-year-olds. So you got to put Oasis on here or whatever the fuck it is. Yeah. That's when you ruin the show.
Yeah.
If they let you just do it, like, just listen, come in. We don't care if you light this place on fire every week. That's what we want. Television needs to be lit on fire again. Yeah. I'm not being disrespectful. Late night is horrible.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
It's unbearable.
Yeah.
At late night television, and guys, I've tried, and I know you're critical of me for saying, it is horrible.
Yeah.
I love the one guy, you know, because I knew him when he was playing the guitar and at the improv. Him and his manager were nice people. Jimmy
Fallon?
Fallon.
Yeah.
I can watch it if it's a good guest, if it's Whitney, you know, something like that. But it's not like, I don't know who, for years I've been sitting there going, who Who the fuck watches late night TV?
Right.
Who would stay up to watch Jimmy Kimmel? That's a sleeping pill.
I mean, it used to be.
I'd rather take a fucking Xanax.
Yeah, it's crazy.
The English guy, all of them. Yeah. I'd rather take a fucking Xanax.
Yeah, it's unreal.
You know.
Kimmel had us in the beginning, like, I don't know, 13, 14, 15 years ago. You know, he hit Ohio hard because we're like, what? The Man Show guy got a, this is cool. This is like a corporate chance. He was like the underdog. And now you see how he just phones it in, sheds those tears, you know, those, you know, gets emotional on purpose. He's one of those guys that can make himself cry.
I've told people for years that I would love in part to go on the road once a month and do this show 5 days a week. What scares me is the consistency. You know, late night TV is 4 fucking nights a week. Mm-hmm. 4 nights a week, I have to be funny to the American audience. That's very tough, guys.
Yeah.
Good luck. Good luck. I know you want to do it on your own, but good luck. 4 nights a week, you need some writers. You need 2 of your best friends to take a job and throw material at you and ideas. They got to be watching the internet. You know, and just it's tough to be consistent. So I do give them that. Yeah. Nobody can be funny 4 nights a week, 52 fucking weeks a year. It's impossible. Not every show's going to be great.
Oh, they have writers. These writers' rooms are filled with people. They have, I think Kimmel has like 12, 14, 16 writers in different rooms. They don't even communicate. You know what I mean? They're all separate, and they have to send in these files and jokes as the day goes on. Like, it's like.
You still get a lot of calls to write?
Well, not anymore, because they all know I'm not doing it, you know.
You don't want to do it. No.
But back in the day, yeah. I mean, I was very lucky, you know. I left a little bit of an imprint and got some really great jobs. Now I don't do anything. I just, I write for the Comedy Central Roast once a year. Even that job, literally, they know that I get burnt out and that I'm having too much fun. So they'll just have me come in the last 2 weeks, clean everything up, get a fresh set of eyes on everything, and if anybody gets added last minute, which always happens, usually the most interesting people, your Dennis Rodmans and your whatevers, you know what I mean? Martha Stewart, I'll come in and really, you know, open up the playbook and write something in their voice. That's fun. But that's only because I love to. What you were saying earlier about taking a break, you know, here and there, like that's sort of my way of taking a break, is taking the roast writing job a couple weeks out of the year, usually during the summertime, and it lands perfectly. You show up at 11 and you're out at 7 and you go do spots. But I get to think in somebody else's mind instead of my own, what would be good for my stand-up. I'm thinking, how would Martha Stewart say this, and how can I utilize her voice? It's like I'm still writing jokes, I'm still thinking funny business, but from a different perspective, so that when I come back to Tony Hinchcliffe 2 weeks later, even though I'm going up at night anyway, but when I'm really starting to write again for whatever I want to do, it's like, you know, refreshing because I'm back to me.
Do you believe, I mean, listen, I started July 18th in 1991. For the first 6 months, I fucked around. Then I won this contest and I became a host at a place once a week. I got to meet Stanhope and a bunch of other people. I got fired after a year and a half. It was time for me to go. You know, that was long enough.
You got fired from?
The broker. Uh-huh. I pushed one of the managers again. Books fell down and shit. He didn't really. The original manager that hired me had left, and they had hired another guy that didn't want comedy. Mm-hmm. He wanted something else on Tuesday nights. And but after I left the broker, I went to New York for a while. And in New York, I learned the ins and outs after 9 months, and I learned what it took to take me to the open mic level, to be an open micer in that farm team, you know, the open mic thing. And after that, I fucking hit it. Like October of 93 to when The Longest Yard came out, I didn't stop doing spots every night. Yeah. Like, I slowed down a little when I came here, but not really, because I had to watch more TV because I was going on auditions. So I would tape like NYPD Blue and then come home at night and watch it, but I didn't know what television was, you know? So, right. But now, after 20-something years, that, you know, when you first start comedy, you're a single guy. You could give your life to it, you know what I'm saying? In your case, you have a wife and She wants to spend time with you and stuff. You could be away 3 weeks a month right now, Tony. Mm-hmm. You're at that age that you have the energy, you know, come home Sunday, you know, go out Wednesday, whatever, add your comedy show. But as time progresses, you pick up a family member. And now it's a little rougher. You know what I'm saying? You don't want your wife up your ass. You see what happened. I mean, you have two choices in this. And we all love comedy. I love doing comedy. But I love my family. I love that today before I came here, my wife made chicken cutlets and mashed potatoes. And my daughter prayed. And now they're at a fucking play date. You know, I'm here with you guys. You know, I have a schedule. I can only go out 2 weeks a month. And that covers my spread as far as me giving you the best comic I could be. Mm-hmm. If I go out 3 weeks in a row, that third week is going to be cacus. I'm not going to be me. I'm worn out. Flights, I'm 50 fucking six, you know. You could just do enough cryotherapies and this and acupuncture. You're still tired. Today I woke up at fucking 7 with the girls and they went somewhere and I fucking took a nap till 12. I told Lee, that's rare for me. But I also took fucking 2 fucking flights. I went to Buffalo last week, came back, and then went into the city. So you have to take a break to learn to appreciate other things. There's some comics who will go out for 3 months straight and then stay in for 9 months. Make a bunch of money for 3 months straight, work like an animal, and then stay home for 9 months. I don't want to do that.
No way.
I want to be in the game every month.
Yeah.
I got a schedule. You have a schedule. I mean, you call in for Monday through Sunday. Yep. Do you not? You
don't. Yeah, unless I'm on the road on the weekend. Yeah.
You call in from coast to coast, I used to call it. Mitzi Shore didn't like when cherry pickers.
Yep.
I learned early she didn't like cherry pickers. You know, I'll work Thursday and Friday and Saturday.
Right. Yeah.
She wants you in there on Tuesday, dog, gacking it up. Yeah. And that's what she look at. Oh, who called in for Monday this week?
Yeah.
So I would just call in coast to coast.
I'm a big believer in that. I think that if you give them the choice, you'll get more. If you feel like you put in for Tuesday and Wednesday, you're more likely to get Friday and Saturday. You know what I mean? If you're putting in, better to put in for everything.
She would fuck with you.
Yeah.
She would fuck with you. If you called in and asked for a specialty?
I'm still convinced she's running everything. Like, I think that building and the way that it communicates, I'm one of those weird guys that really believes in the power of the Comedy Store. Like, I think the place is so magical that I think that whatever, you know, however it works, whoever appears to be running it, it's still just, I still think she's so powerful that she left that imprint there.
Listen, there's places that you go to as a comedian, performer, whatever the fuck you want to call yourself, that you could feel energy there. Something happened in that room.
Mm-hmm.
Something happened in that room. I watched the Leonard Skinner documentary when they go back to that studio and the guy feels the wall. The Comedy Store, something happened there. People have developed there. People have become stars out of there. There's a weird energy there.
The energy of growth.
Yeah. I have that energy back now because I stopped going to all the other places. Yeah. I love you, Joe. I love everybody, but I'm not going to all the places. I'm in the Marines.
Yeah.
And Marines hang out with other fucking Marines. Okay? The Marines don't go hang out with the fucking Coast Guard.
Yeah.
At the Laugh Factory. Or they don't go hang out with the fucking, the Cub Scouts at the Improv. Yeah. The Marines hang out with fucking Marines. I'm not putting any other club down. I'm just telling you what I see and how I see it. I look forward to following Ron White.
Yeah.
I look forward to following Joe Rogan. Mm-hmm. When I'm in a show that's not high level, I tend to change. So I always want to keep the stakes high.
100%.
And that's what the Comedy Store does for me. That's why I'm having better shows on the road. Since I've dedicated myself to the Comedy Store again, my comedy has improved 150% because the confidence is there.
Yeah.
You just follow Chris D'Elia, fucko.
Yep.
You died, but you got a lesson. You got your head handed to you.
Yep.
Go home and figure out how not to get your head handed to you by Chris D'Elia. And it happens. You follow Chris D'Elia, it's a death trap.
Yeah.
Ali Wong might go off, you know.
Yeah.
I'm back to that. I was going to other clubs that were less superior lineups. So I would drop my energy. I would drop my guard. I wouldn't take the set seriously. I want my heart to beat.
Right.
I want to be sitting there when that blue light goes on and Tony Hinchcliffe is on. He's about to bring me up. I got to lose a breath of fresh air. It's like somebody punched me in the fucking side and I have to recover my breath again. As I'm getting up and you're saying shit about me coming to the stage, is my Uncle Joey, he opened up for me in the special. My heart's about to blow out of the chest. That's it. My dick can't get hard.
Yeah.
At that point, it fucking, who's the hottest chick in the world right now? Put a pussy in my face. My dick's not supposed to get hard. I'm ready for that stage.
Yeah.
And that's what I think the Comedy Store.
I was watching that Tyson documentary. You seen that Tyson documentary on Netflix? Woo! I was rewatching it for the second time yesterday. And he was talking about his, what he was literally thinking when he was walking to the ring. Supreme confidence. Nobody can touch me. As I get closer to the ring, I'm getting more confident. By the time I'm in the ring, I'm an animal and nothing can stop me. I feel bad for my opponent. I'm looking him directly in his eyes. The second he looks away, I know, you know, yeah, it's exactly the Comedy Store. When you hear that fucking Jeff Scott piano, or you see the light go on for the guy in front of you and the fucking here we fucking go. Like, it's literally, you know, it's fucking the energy. It's almost impossible to contain. We all have our own little ways. We're all playing it cool.
Yes,
you know,
yes,
we're all playing it cool, but man, it is game time. And the more you want to fucking, you know, all the work that you've done, the bigger, here's what's great about that place is the greater you are, the more it pushes you back. Right. So it's like all the sets you've ever done, that you're putting that on your shoulders. It might be these people's first time seeing you. You're right. They just saw bing, bang, boom, bing, boom. Right. And then they've heard of this Joey Diaz. They've heard of this Tony Hinchcliffe. They're at the Comedy Store, but they've already seen great stuff. At this point, they're thinking they know what the hell is going on. They're thinking it's not going to get better than that. That guy's my favorite. I already decided. And then, boom, you got to come in and shock the world. You got to shock them back up to thinking, nope, I'm the one you're going to think of first tomorrow when you wake up. You think about the night you had last night at the Comedy Store. I'm going to be first. Let those guys be second.
You ever go on the road and kill all weekend? And go back to the store on Tuesday, into the bag of dicks, and check yourself. Like, what the fuck just happened?
Always.
I just fucking destroyed all weekend.
The people closest to me bust my balls. My wife doesn't, but my next door neighbor, some of my closer buddies, they go, Tony, why do you always put him for Sunday? Because I'm always, you know, I'm always, what'd you do today? Blah, 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 blah. How about you? Well, I flew in from blah, blah, blah. Every single Sunday, pretty much, right? I take off one or two a month, weekends. And they go, why do you put in for these Sundays? You just did, you know, 5 hour long sets, one on Thursday, two Friday, two Saturday. Why are you doing 15? Because that's where it's built, right there. It's built on Sunday nights, 15 minutes. And you know what else I do? 8 minutes on the Monday nights. I put my name in that whole bucket thing that they put everybody's names in. Then at 10 p.m., they start pulling names and they make a new lineup. Unless I'm number 16 or farther back, I'm going up. I'm working the newest eight. I'm taking the chances of the thing that I thought of in the car ride 3 days later that I said I was going to try that I didn't try during the weekend. I'm trying it there. Those Mondays, those little 8 minute sets are priceless. And the Sundays, same thing. That's where the real work's done. You can get it right.
I told Lee today, we had somebody in here the other day and she was talking about how I used to host on Sundays. Mm-hmm. That was my life.
Yeah.
I became and I used to host in front of her. I used to host the showcases.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Host the fucking showcases.
It's a big deal.
It's just to go up in front of her and for her to give me direction.
Yeah.
Like she would, in between sets, she would call me over and whisper things in my ear. Like, I like that job. Bring up this idiot and fucking blow up the stage before him. I don't want to pass him. I don't need another schwarzer in here. You know, she would say shit like that to me, you know, like, I don't need another fucking Mexican in here. Jesus Christ. All these Mexicans are coming out of the woodwork. Everybody wants to be Carlos. You know, she would say things to me, but it wasn't that. It was me performing in front of her took that fear away. That's it. There's no more curtain. This is the worst you could bomb because she doubled as your mom and the talent coordinator. You know what I'm saying? She doubled. Mm-hmm. So she gave you a mom's love, but she also fucking let you have it. That was a horrible job. And then she poked my stomach and go, psss, and let the air out. That was a horrible job. So, you know, every time you bomb in the store when she was around, you drove home and you'd want to crash into the polling fountain. Like if you bombed in the main room and you were walking out, you saw her in a chair, you just went right to your fucking car. And you wanted your fucking car to go with. Can you imagine? That was nice. She would just try. And you didn't know when she was coming in.
I was afraid she was going to fire me. She wasn't really watching sets when I got there that much at all. But I was afraid she was going to fire me as a phone guy. Because because I was the phone guy. And if you missed a call, you know, I'm sticking my head out the second floor window. Oh, every single day. She'd call once every 2 hours. Hey, Tony, is Tommy there? She would always be looking for the talent coordinator to make lineups or whatever. When's he coming over? Blah, 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 blah. But it, I mean, there were times in which I'd run. Say I had to go use the restroom or something. You hear that, and this is old school again. It's like there wasn't portable phones at the Comedy Store. These guys didn't even have... they didn't even have a computer in the room, right? They had nothing. So it's like you had to get here that phone. You had to run to get it. So if you're smoking a joint, if you went down the back stairs and taking a hit of a joint, you hear the phone, you had to book it. Hopefully you get it by that fifth or sixth ring if it's her.
You know, I was a telemarketer there.
Really?
When they had telemarketers in 97, I worked for Enz Mitchell, me, Shema, and I was also the runner. I took Freddie Soto's job. So I doubled as the runner. Mm-hmm. Me, Bob Oshak, would switch the job, and then I would fucking host on Sunday nights. That was my income. And I worked the door while I was hosting.
Yeah, same.
25 for the door, and I would host. And then I would do my spot, bring up Eddie Griffin, and give it to Don Barris and let him host the rest.
Same
of the
exact thing.
Night.
I was, Tommy gave it to me quick. When I became a door guy there almost 6, 7, 8 months later, he had me hosting on a Monday night, back when they used to have it on Sunday and Monday. So I'd host a Monday, and then 2 weeks later I'd host another Monday, and then all of a sudden I'm hosting a Sunday. So it became a regular thing, and that's really where the Kill Tony
concept
came from, because those comedians were doing 3 minutes, and the thing that I would do that other people wouldn't do was I'd make fun of them after their set. But the other thing I would do is if they had a joke that I had the answer to, if that makes sense, if I had a note, a good note that's short and sweet, you know, like I would say it into the thing. Hey, instead of saying Kurt Cobain for that joke, say Squirt Cobain. You know what I mean? Or whatever they were talking, you know, just a weird example. But it's like I'd give them an actual note from up there. Just a thought, you know, just say that. Maybe just a thought. You don't have to take if you don't want to. Anyway, your next comedian. You know what I mean? So it was sort of like, it became sort of like a roasty show that was sometimes educational. And then everybody was telling me to start a podcast, you know, 6, 7 years ago. And I was thinking in my head, like, well, maybe what about live? Because I like an audience, man. You know, the podcast where it has a little crowd, like Legion of Skanks do that. They do it and they have like, you know, 10 people that come to the bar and you can sort of get the laughs. Like, it's like I feed off of that. The normal, regular podcast, sometimes I get a little tightened up because I'm listening and I'm daydreaming, you know, especially a guy like you where I could just sit here and I'm just basically just a fan listening. But if there's audience members, then it's like, hit, 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 you know. So I built the thing live around it. But yeah, it started because I was an MC. And Kill Tony's basically just, instead of 3 minutes, it's 1 minute. And I interview the people. Add a little bit of that Howard Stern old school interview element. I always loved his interviews way back. It was one of my big things. And so I try to use my gut instincts to ask the questions and figure out what we can get out of these people. And yeah.
And now you announced a world tour.
Yeah.
A fucking tour a couple weeks ago.
Yep. We're going everywhere.
I talked to Red Band. He was telling me you guys are going to a bunch of fucking places.
It's chaos. You know, we just got back from Europe, but now we're doing all the cities that we haven't gotten to do yet that we wanted to do. Vancouver, Seattle. I mean, everywhere. Chicago, New York City, Gramercy Theater in June. I mean, everywhere. Madison, Minneapolis, Milwaukee, Spokane, Seattle, Portland. Jeez. All these places that have wanted to kill Tony, they're getting it.
Where can they get the dates at?
TonyHinchcliffe.com or DeathSquad.tv. I'm doing a lot of stand-up comedy too. We're doing La Jolla. I'm doing the store there and, you know, everywhere. TonyHinchcliffe.com for tickets for those things.
I'm happy you made it on today. I've been watching you for the last couple of years and your journey, and it's been inspirational. And talking to you, I didn't know about that you got Killed Tony from doing that on the Monday night. That's brilliant. That's why I love you.
Well, thanks.
And that's why I'm happy you're in the game, bro.
Thank you, and thanks for being one of the greats and inspiring me. Man,
you're one of the fucking greats. I watch you and I fucking die. But thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you, Joe.
I want to thank you crazy motherfuckers for listening. Follow Tony Hinchcliffe on TonyHinchcliffe.com.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and that's fucking it. Lee, what's the story? You all right?
I'm great.
I don't want to hear nothing. I love you cocksuckers. I want to thank Tony Hinchcliffe. I want to thank the Christ Killer. I want to thank all you people for listening. Don't forget this weekend. Not this weekend, April 19th, I'm at the beautiful theater in Minneapolis, which is sold out. Sorry about that. But 420, get ready to bring the reefer. I'll be in motherfucking Milwaukee. I got that Jeffrey Dahmer OG I'm bringing up to that motherfucker. 420, we added an extra show. Go for it. We're going to have a good motherfucking time. But before we go, the Church of What's Happening Now is brought to you by the Tita Inversion Table. Let me explain something to you. Like I told you in the beginning, this weekend, Pittsburgh was phenomenal. But my back was killing me. When I got home, my wife goes, you don't even need to go to chiropractor. Let's try out the Tita Inversion Table. Like I said, it sounds strange, but hanging upside down is great for your back. When you're upside down, it takes the weight off your spine. And that releases the tension in your shoulders, your neck, and your joints all over your body. Tita has helped me with my back pain just those 2 days that I hung. And it can help you too. And even if you're not getting aches and pains like Uncle Joey, but you work out, train, or do yoga, add a Tita to your routine. It will help you recover faster and help your body in alignment. If you work a job where you're on your feet all day, or you work a job where you sit all day, a Tita Inversion Table will help keep your posture and your joints healthy. You got to take care of your body, guys. Look at me. It looked like the steroids backfired. You understand me? No matter what your situation, you'll feel better. And to hang upside down, it's fun. Plus, it's small enough to fit in your apartment or your office. I love this thing. I've done my homework, and this is the best inversion table on the market. Guys, they've been hanging up people upside down since 1981, and with 3 million happy customers, you know they got your back. Now, what I'm going to do for you is this, because I love you people, and I want you to be healthy. Tita inversion tables have thousands of reviews on Amazon with an average 4.9 star rating, and they have a special offer just for you church motherfucking savages for a limited time. You get $70 off a Tita inversion table plus $100 worth of bonus accessories. Where are you going to get that action from? The church. So go to Tita.com/church. I'm going to tell you what else I'm going to hook you up with. Free shipping, free returns, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. No risk to try it out. Remember, you can only get $70 off a Tita inversion plus free bonus accessories by going to Tita.com/church. That's Tita.com/church. Get upside down, you bad motherfuckers. You're gonna be thankful you ordered this. Also, representing the church is my favorite of all time, Onnit. Why? Because like Tita, like all the other companies that I bring at you, they back what they talk. You follow me? Alpha Brain, one of the best products on the market for your neurological and whatnot. If you don't like it, it don't work for you. Keep it. I know it'll send you back the money. Plus, they got the Shroom Tech. Plus, the Shroom Tech Immune. Plus, the Shroom Tech Sport. Listen, you're flying. You're trying to recover. You want more oxygen. Shroom Tech is the way to go. The protein powder, the supplements that are on it are the real deal Mongolian field. I can't help you out with the kettlebells or the bats or anything else you have. You're on your own there. But as far as supplement, Joey got you. Whether it's the jerky, whatever you need, I got you. Go to Onnit.com right now and press in.
Church.
And get 10% off your first order. Delivered right to your house. You understand me? So listen, I want to thank Tony Hinchcliffe. I want to thank the Christ Killer. I want to thank Onnit. I want to thank Tita Inversion Table. But most importantly, I want to thank you guys for a great week. Tony Hinchcliffe, Jennifer Pryor, you guys were great. But most importantly, you guys for listening. I love you guys. I'll see you Monday morning early. Tip top Magoo, ready to go. Stay black. Lee, kick this motherfucking meal.